We're getting kids on the right track from the beginning so that they, and this is how we actually create this mission of, or the vision of chronic disease and pain, is we have a healthy, firmly self-identifying children who know who they are and they know who they're not, because it's the confusion of who you're not which creates bad behaviors.
So true.
And if you know who you are, if you know what your body needs, you're making informed decisions all of the time. It's when you don't know who you are, that's when people get very lost.
Welcome to the Everyday Epigenetics Raw, Real, Relatable podcast. I'm your host, Susan Robbins, epigenetic human performance coach. This is where we discuss all things lifestyle, environment, food, exercise, work, mind, and social interaction as they pertain to epigenetic expression in a way that's relatable to everyone. So if you're ready to start viewing you as an individual, take control of your life and health, and get results, buckle up. Here we go.
Welcome to Everyday Epigenetics, Raw, Real, and Relatable. I'm Susan Robbins. I'm your host. And this is where we delve into precision health and epigenetics, how your environment and the choices you make every day influence how your genetics express. And it influences your overall health and quality of life. There is no one-size-fits-all approach. It's all about genetics, not generics. So this is my very first episode. And for my introductory episode, I chose someone to come on with me. And I'm so honored to have this person here that he agreed to do this with me. But he has been just such a catalyst in where my career and my health has gone. Dr. Cam McDonald is an exercise physiologist. Okay, listen to all these people. Exercise physiologist, dietitian, PhD scholar in nutrition and exercise and preventing chronic disease, a fellow of the Australasian Society of Lifestyle Medicine, experienced clinician, international leader in the application of personalized health and epigenetics. His focus is to educate individuals on how the whole environment impacts physical, mental health, and disease. Cam is the CEO of Precision Health Alliance and the VP of Shea Wellness, the leading AI-driven precision wellness platform that most of us in the United States have never heard of until now, unless you've been working with me or talking with me, because I've been touting this since 2020 when I met Cam. 2020, when everything crashed through COVID, we were all, a lot of us that have been doing business in person, we're looking for people to partner with to help each other do things online, because nobody wanted to work with you outside of the house. So came across Cam in 2020 through a group looking to put together a program for high-powered athletes where we all had to work with each other's things. And I was the genetic person, and I was told there was a platform that was AI-based of epigenetics and had an app with it. And I thought, okay. And I found out later, this is totally how I'm created to go, okay, that's bullshit. I'm far superior. I do DNA. Until I had my first coaching session with Cam. And it changed my life. Like I said, my health, my professional life. I ended up becoming a coach just a few short months later. I said, I have to be a part of this group. And he became my mentor, and he has become my friend. And I'm so honored to have him here. There is no one that speaks of personalized health like Dr. Cam McDonald. And thank you for being my very first guest, Cam. And we are going to have a fabulous conversation about personalized health. So buckle up, people, because off we go. Welcome, Cam.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's so great to be here with you. And it's it feels like I've known you a lot longer than the 3 or so years that we've been hanging out. It's been amazing getting to know you and just watching you just change people's lives time after time and be incredibly successful with it. So it's great to be here.
Well, I think maybe it feels longer because for like the first 2 years, I let you mispronounce my name.
That's
true. Only you could do.
Well, I mean, it feels like we've had two relationships, one is Suzanne and one is Susan. And you were so kind not to correct me.
Because I was having so much fun with it. And with your accent, it just worked. So I was like, I can't correct him until someone said, is your name actually Suzanne? And I was like, no, it's actually Susan. But for Cam, it can be whatever he wants.
That's very kind. It's very kind to me. Thank you.
But yeah, what I'd like to do before you get into talking about personalized health, I'd love for people to hear it because, like I said, I have my journey. Let people know kind of what your journey into the world of personalized health coming from exercise physiology and dietetics?
Yeah. So, firstly, it's awesome to be part of this incredible first episode of everything you're going to be doing. I'm sure it's going to be amazing. My journey started, my dad was a dentist. My mum owned an alternative healing center in town. So I had really the two very powerful influences in my life. But I went down the scientific track, you know, loved the science side of things, really wanted to be a professional sports person and then work with sports or just like sports in general. So I did exercise physiology. I then got into dietetics and nutrition as a master's degree. And I started working in hospital, realized that just I wanted to prevent disease rather than try and just feed people who were diseased or who were in hospital with end-stage disease. So I went into my PhD looking at chronic disease reduction in breast cancer survivors using a combination of exercise and nutrition. And I started in private practice at that same time. And this is where personalization became really important because in research, you're just waiting to see what happens. You're not trying to push people or in a particular way. But then in private practice, everything is about getting a result. Like it's really different. One person's paying for it, the other person's just turning up and seeing what happens. And so I got really interested in the private side of things because I was having these people come in and not getting results and getting really annoyed. I mean, they're just saying, oh, it's just, you know, that's just the nature of health. Like some people don't respond. That's not an acceptable answer. It's I actually want an answer. I want to get healthy. I don't want to be the person that misses out. And so I started looking at personalization and started looking at genetics. And then literally day one of me calling around genetics companies that educate you on how to do genes, I run into my CEO and founder, Matt Riemann, who essentially, along with our medical team and chief medical officer, have been leading the space in precision health for the last 15 years and very much under the radar almost. So that first meeting with Matt was just, it says, it's not actually just about genes. It's about what those genes are expressing and how genes work together in clusters. It's not just about individual genes. And I was thinking, oh man, this sounds exactly like I want to, like the stuff that I want to do. So I then went on my track. I was incredibly skeptical for the first 12 months. Like there was no support, no education, just this readout from this platform. And over that period of time, I was exposed to some of the most incredible information from modern medicine, ancient medicine, how it's all being stitched together on the background of this incredible data set. And so the big thing that blew up for me was in my trial, I had a few individuals just getting the best results in my PhD and then other individuals not really moving much at all. Mm-hmm. And as I then went on and as I found out, it's the phenotype of the individuals that were getting results were incredibly specific to the intervention that I was providing. Now I know that 5 meals per day and certain types of foods and certain types of like omega-3 supplements actually are going to be more effective in some individuals than others. And they are exactly who got killer results. And then a bunch of other individuals that were just getting sort of results. And that's the reality as well. You go in and any practitioner, you know, they celebrate their wins because, you know, we have these people that lose 10 kilos, lose 15 kilos, but the ones that gained 1 kilo and didn't get motivated or tried it, but it didn't really work for them. You forget about them because they disappear out of your service and you just say, they weren't ready. They weren't ready. Yep. And so this is what it's really opened my mind to is that it's actually possible to get every single person a result if you know how to support them, not only from a languaging and coaching perspective, which is very personalized, how we're different there, but also when you look at the intervention. And there's so much non-response literature now that indicates 15 to 30% of people are not going to get the result you would expect from a given intervention. And right. So what do we do with that? And so that got me so fascinated about, well, I want to get a result for these individuals. I want everyone to be healthy. And that's very much our mission now. And it has been since the inception of Shea. And that is to eliminate chronic disease and pain by the year 2050 and have everyone living their healthiest and happiest lives. And it seems like such a simple thing to say, because I've said it 1,000 times in the presentations that I do, but that truly is our goal, and everything that we are doing is working towards the elimination of chronic disease and pain. I just imagine a world without that, like how different Absolutely. The fabric of our community would be.
And we see it, those of us that are out there actively coaching it, you see it. You see the difference it makes. I mean, I'm not going to have just experts on here. I'm going to have clients coming on that are excited to come on and talk about how precision health literally changed their lives.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's not acceptable to not have results.
Absolutely. And what I'm discovering is that when a person understands what their body needs and their mind needs, which is all predictable based off the way that we can look at phenotype now, you actually start to understand who you are, like how your body has been responding to the world around you for your entire life. So if you've got people are naturally competitive or collaborative, people exist on that continuum. And if you're naturally competitive and someone says, hey, are you competitive? You're like, yeah, I'm competitive. That's how you identify with yourself. Whereas somebody says, oh, are you competitive? Oh, no, I just don't really like competition. Right. I prefer to help people. It's like, and neither are wrong. But what happens, because this is biologically built, and if someone goes, hey, I love your competitiveness, I think it's fantastic, after they've been given some results, so they go, oh, my God, you know, my parents told me that I'm too competitive and there's something wrong with that. Or you actually get to understand who you are. You know, I'm a spinach eater. I love spinach. Actually, if you've got an allergy to peanuts, yeah, no, I don't eat peanuts. You identify with that because it's part of your biological response. And so this is when you understand what's good for your body in all of the environments, you start to understand who you are because it's the consistent nature. And that's the very, very powerful piece that's really shifted for me. I was very focused on nutrition and exercise because they were my quals. But now I'm realizing, hey, how can you feel more like yourself? That's the goal, because the more you are like yourself, the less reactive you are to the environment around you. It's and this is both physical, mental, purposeful. It's the whole gamut. So it really brings in a much more rounded conversation for what health is.
Absolutely. And what I've seen, and I'm sure you've seen, is that a lot of people don't even know who they're supposed to be. Like, they're out there seeking, feeling something is off. They're so out of flow that they really don't know who they are until they find out. And then they see these things on their profile and say, wow, that is me. I feel like I've been given permission to actually be myself, and some people for the first time in their lives, to be authentic. And that's why I say, take off the mask and own who you are. And it's just transformational when you can be your authentic self according to it's my biology, right?
Yeah. And that
favorite
can happen
phrase.
I love that. And that can happen in so many different ways. Like, we've got some individuals that find out they're night owls and they give themselves an easy morning and they feel like they've given themselves permission to be themselves just by taking it slower in the morning and not jumping up and doing that boot camp that was just they were dreading every night before they'd go to sleep. That is a really physical component. And then even getting somebody to eat regularly. You know, we're working with teens in elite hockey, which is field hockey out in Australia, and just telling certain individuals to eat more frequently, they find their mood significantly improves. Yeah, I am always hungry. It's like, that is good. No, I can eat all the time. I don't need to fast. Like, it's actually really bad for everybody in my vicinity if I fast, because I get really hangry. Whereas other individuals just feel like they're beating their head up against a brick wall with work because they're finding it frustrated by a team leader that's saying, hey, just don't express yourself like that. You've got to be more logical and you've got to do it my way. And they've got a brain that's, you know, abstract and creative and impulsive. And that's a strength. You know, you need that in an emergency. You need that when you're being creative. Mm-hmm. And that gets suppressed in people and they go, oh, geez, well, my natural impulse is wrong. Who am I? You know, and that's where it is very psychological, but it's also a physical component too, that just doing things that are physically right for your body make you feel like you're in your skin and not trying to fight against your health. Like, it's so fascinating. We find health so difficult because we're holding on to this diet that we're doing, or we're holding on to a relationship or to a workplace or to a way of doing that, a way of communicating. It's so yes, it's incredibly relieving to know and be yourself.
It is. And that's what I hear from people. I, and I, even myself, when we first met, first thing you said to me is, how you feeling, mate? I said, oh, you know, I'm a little tired and I work out. I'm a CrossFitter. I've been for years. You know, my workouts aren't that great. I'm holding on to a little extra body fat. And you said to me, what are you eating? And of course, I hadn't even looked at the profile because I did DNA. Didn't matter. Right? You said, and I said, oh, I've been intermittent fasting for like a year. And you said, oh, did you even look at your profile? You're an activator. You should be eating like five times a day. And I said, no, I'm good with twice a day. And you said, yeah, no, you're not. Are you going to use this or not? And as soon as I delved into that, like you said, my moods changed. I was much more energetic. My workouts improved. It just, like, everything changed as I ate more and I dropped down to the smallest I'd been. Mm. And it just blew my mind how that, and I'd been living as a different health type for like 54 years, thinking I was a night owl. And that's the other thing you told me is good. You know, you should be getting up early and going to bed early. And, you know, I thought, nope, I'm the night owl. No, you're not. And, you know, when you're just so out of flow, it can create so many health issues on top of that. And, yeah. So I'm loving this. Keep going. So one question I have, I've seen on some different Facebook groups that different coaches have up there, whether it's physical fitness coaches, things like that. And I've heard people say, oh, I don't want to hear this, that everybody's different crap. And I go, how do I not go off on this person? Right. How do I not just react because everybody is so different? And I've heard trainers in the gym talking about some of their bigger clients and say, they're just effing lazy. They just need to get their ass in here. And they're so resistant to hearing that there's any other way than getting up and first thing in the morning, getting these people in there, busting their butts, that they're just lazy. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to some of that, how that comes? Like, cause it blows my mind and it's so hard to hear. Because these people feel defeated.
Yeah. Let's break that down. So the first part is everybody's the same. We categorically know that that's not the case. So we have, even just looking at genetics, we know that people are different. And even if you've got two twins, the twins will definitely not say that they are the same. Even twins have a difference because of the way their genes interact with the environment. So that, and you think about your body as a six-year-old, and now as a 30-year-old, you are not the same. And so even you internally are changing all of the time. You're gradually shifting throughout your life. So then let's get a little bit more evidence around that. Yeah, great. So there's some great studies out there that are completely underutilized, but they're published in the top tier journals of their respective disciplines. So one recent study a couple of years ago repeated that of a study 30 years ago. And what they looked at, this is exercise. So they say, yeah, cool. Everybody's the same. Come and do, you want to get fitter? You got to come and do endurance training. So we're going to do that. So they made 500 people from family groups do 6 months of aerobic training. And what happened to the group? Some people got out of control results. Like they doubled their VO2 max. Like they increased their physical fitness by huge amounts. And then there was a 15% group at the other end of the spectrum that got less fit after 6 months of aerobic training, and then everybody fit in between in the middle. And so what they said, aerobic training improves your VO2 by 400, but that's not the case. Some people improved it by 1,000. They're underselling it. But at the same time, some people reduced it by 100, and this is a serious problem. And they thought, oh, okay, well, could it be that these people were well-trained or they didn't turn up? But no, that wasn't the case. It was actually a control group and family groups genetically. There was a heritability to the lack of response to that training. And so what they did, they then repeated that study almost 30 years later, and they took twins and they made them do resistance training for 12 weeks, then have a break for 12 weeks, and then aerobic training for 12 weeks, or the reverse order. And what they found is that 15% of people who were doing aerobic training, running, did not get fitter and got less fit. But some people got bucket loads fitter and everybody else got somewhere in between. And then they looked at strength and they found that some people gained maybe 3 to 5% of their strength. Other people gained 100% of their strength doing the same training. So are we all the same? No. Yep. Do we all respond to the same things? No. And what's fascinating about that, when they took the person who didn't respond to aerobic training, so they were running but not getting fitter, when they made them do strength training, resistance training, their fitness went up, like as if they'd been running. So this is where if you do the exercise that is better for you, and in this case, resistance training was better designed for these twins' genes, they responded not only in strength, but in their fitness as well, whereas they didn't get fitter from running. This is what's blowing minds. When it, like, you cannot argue with this data of people are not the same. And we see that in every single study that is done that looks at inter-individual variability, that is the difference between individuals of the same intervention, rather than just reporting a group average, like, oh, on average, everybody got a 3 kilo gain in lean body mass for resistance training or whatever. Mm-hmm. Let's look at everybody's results broken down. And what we see is that 15 to 30% of individuals will get the opposite result of what the average says. 15 to 30, so consistently across all of the literature. And there is one excuse to this. Well, no, there's a couple of groups that are looking to disprove non-responders in exercise, and I'll get into food in a second as well.
Okay.
What they found is that if you make someone do 5 hours of per week of intense training, then everybody gets a result. But what that result is for some people is a 4% increase, 5% increase in their VO2 max. For another person, it's a 30 to 40% increase in their VO2 max. So you're going to tell somebody, oh, I'm going to get you to exercise for 5 hours a week and you're going to get 3% fitter. It's like, no thanks. This is why people drop out. Whereas there's another type of training that's better for them. So it's not to say that people don't respond to exercise. It's just that if you do the exercise that's right for you, you'll get much faster and better results, and it'll feel more like you too. The same thing goes with nutrition. We look at something like the Mediterranean diet, and everyone lauds the Mediterranean diet. And it's a fantastic diet. And I would say across all of the diets, it's actually one of the most rounded for most people.
Agree.
But then you look at the genetic variants. If you've got particular FTO and MTHFR variants, you're more likely to lose lean body mass while you do the Mediterranean diet. If you've got a CRP variant, you need more fish to reduce inflammation. Otherwise, you don't get the benefit. And if you don't have that, then you don't need as much fish. If you have adipo Q genes that are related to, if you have particular variants, you don't get the metabolic benefits. So, but you do if you have a different variant. So even the Mediterranean diet needs to be adjusted in order to fit the person to help them get a result. And we then look at something like the phenotype, where we look at stronger, bigger bodies that hold more mass, naturally predisposed to obesity and can be healthfully obese. That's very important that 30% of people are healthy and obese. When we put them on a plant-based diet, and the research indicates this, we see significant reductions in type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease risk, fatty liver. Do you want to add something there?
Yeah, I do. Because these are the people that a lot of times they're going to be insulin resistant. They have more metabolic issues. They're bigger people, and they're primary care people or their nutritionists and all, because a lot of times they'll have issues with insulin, say you need to go keto, go high fat, high protein, drop your carbs. And down the road, everybody sees like a little bit better in the beginning, and then it starts going downhill and they seem to create even worse issues. And again, so it's generic recommendations, not looking at where the actual person is, what their body needs. And these generic recommendations are taking them a lot of times in the wrong direction, specifically with this group of people.
Well, and the big part of that is that everyone's focused on weight. We've come to this conclusion that you have to lose weight to be healthy, and those diets do make you lose weight. However, keto, there is evidence to say that your insulin resistance increases, and true keto is very high fat.
These individuals have
a naturally high BMI, they have the greatest risk for gallstone issues, which is going to be precipitated by a very, very high fat diet. And so we have a weight loss occurring, but it's not fixing metabolically what's going on in their body. And then other diseases occur. Oh, great, your weight's down, but all of the diseases that we're trying to prevent in the first place are still around, which is a problem.
Yeah.
But then we look at an individual who's got a very delicate structure, the phenotype of a the typical ectomorph, to use those terms, where they've got a lot less muscle, a lot less fat, they're very fine, they're very lean. If as they age, if you give them plant-based diets, their fracture risk increases. So you actually need to give them protein because they're very catabolic in nature. So they have a lot of trouble holding mass. They demineralize their bones when they're stressed because they use the calcium, they release the calcium to create more energy or create an attentiveness, which is the way that they deal with stress.
Right.
And we have plant-based diets are not good for everybody. So
no diet is good for everyone, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. So the this is the and so when we have this conversation of, oh, hey, everyone's the same, categorically wrong, and they're being lazy. And ultimately they're blaming other people for being lazy when in fact they're being lazy clinically of like, oh, I need to understand more about this person. And what's so fascinating is that individuals that have a bigger, stronger body, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, in future, bigger, stronger bodies that hold more mass, their stress response is to conserve mass. Their whole body is designed to conserve. And so if they aren't engaged in the right way, then they stress. And if they're being deprived of foods, they stress. And there's a way of coaching them to support them so they don't go into deprivation, they don't go into stress, so they then have energy to use. And this is where, you know, we can blame people for being lazy till the cows come home, but that's exactly the opposite of what's going to motivate them to actually get out and do something about it. You know, it's the small minority that go, oh yeah, you're right, I am being lazy, I've got to pick my gear up. Like it's the vast majority that just reject it and think of it as white noise. And then it makes exercise and nutrition less attractive.
Absolutely.
And these are
I mean, a lot of these people are the ones you see that are really busting ass out there at the gym. And they're really trying to work it with their programs. They're eating all the protein all the time as they're supposed to, eat their several meals a day. And they're at the gym. They're just working it, and they're not seeing results. And then it's just, again, that defeating feeling for them and that frustration, which creates more stress, then they want to store more because they're so frustrated that things aren't happening. They're on the scale. It's not changing. Their pants are getting tighter and tighter. And these are just your most loving people that start to cave inward because they're so frustrated that nothing's working anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And it's even harder because they're often working at a time that's hyper stressful for them. You know, and we look at circadian rhythms. This is another really powerful component of personalization, is our brain, our body have preferences for what kind of stress we want to be exposed to throughout the day. And people, night owls know this. Like, they're trying to have two coffees just to keep up with their 8 a.m. mornings. Like, my brain isn't good in the morning. It's like, actually, it's because you're meant to slow down and take it easy and not actually try and ramp it up with coffee. But this is the people that they'll be training first thing in the morning. It just elicits a huge stress response. And this is what the literature says, that if you take a night owl and make them do really hard training in the morning, their cortisol levels go up at least for the next hour. Their blood sugar levels can be dysregulated for the next 5 hours just because they were doing training in the morning. And their blood sugar levels are better if they do nothing in the morning.
Nothing
compared to, and there was one particular study that looked very closely at continuous glucose monitoring with the effect of a high intensity interval training session in the morning or the afternoon or doing nothing. And the worst result was if they did high intensity interval training in the morning. The best result was if they did that same exercise in the afternoon, and the middle result was do nothing. So it's about the time of day that you are stressing yourself, not just the type of the way that you are stressing yourself. That same exercise session was effective later in the day, but not effective earlier in the day. And this is a real frustration for people. Why isn't my waist circumference going down? Well, that's directly related to cortisol and inflammation, interleukin 6 and insulin resistance, which is essentially what the literature is saying. And then that also then goes into the cognitive side of things too, where you have night owls. When we see ratings of performance, we see them at 30% of their capacity at 8 a.m. in the morning. But an early bird is at 90% of their mental capacity at 8 a.m. in the morning. Imagine those two people in a team meeting. Oh. No wonder they're annoyed at each other. One wants to go, the other one wants to just go away. And we don't understand that this is a real physiological thing that's changing the way that you're motivated and then influences your day for the rest of the day too. And I guess that's without even going into, you know, the physical environment that you're in, the social environment that you're in, the way that your brain processes information, the way that you set goals, it's all going to be different. And we know that because cognitive behavioral therapy is the number one utilized psychological tool for changing behavior.
Yes.
And it is lauded as the top. There is a review of effectiveness and it's 40% effective.
40% overall.
So that's a less than a coin flip.
Yeah.
And this is because if you use the same strategy with everybody, you're going to get different responses. Some people are hyper competitive. They don't want to go through the boring thing of like change this, change that. Why am I doing that? Analyze that. It's like, what am I doing next? Can we just start? And if that's not the instruction, then I get bored. Other people are like, oh, I really love this analysis and I'm really understanding my mind now. I can process my brain thoughts better. And yeah, I really get this has been hyper valuable. And this is where we see, we have to also coach and speak to the individual in a way. And if anyone's got kids, you know that there's a way that you got to speak to your kids and you'll know that it's different for your two different kids or three different kids that you have. We have different ways that people receive information because of the way that their brain is set up, the way that they process, the bias that they have biologically. And this has been in the literature of behavioral genetics for the last two decades. And there's an interesting little stat, and then I'll have a pause. But and that is when you're a kid, your behavioral, your genetics account for around about 15% of your behaviors. When you're an adult, it accounts for 50. When you're older, it accounts for about 70. And why do you become more and more aligned with your genetics over time behaviorally? And that's because your genetics is like the storage of information for your bloodline, essentially. So how do we respond to the world? That's what your genetics is there for, is it's like a hard drive. And so what happens over time is that you respond a particular way and a particular way and a particular way. And for a while you judge yourself and think, oh, I'm not fitting in here if I respond this way. But once you're old, you just don't care. It's like, oh, this is the way I respond. This is what you're getting. I know who I am now. And so this impulse that you're getting from your store of information in your genetics just becomes, you become more accepting of who you are. And this is why we're working with children and schools, early learning all the way through to help them understand who are you, totally confirm their identity biologically so they can understand their impulses from that aren't going to change. And from a genetic perspective, so that they can actually co-opt their strengths and do something great with it. And of course, there's a nurture component. You can adjust things and you shape things, but it's, you know, if you think that you have complete free will over your behaviors, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage because there is only a number of ways the human body can move. We can't move like a bird. Like free will doesn't turn you into a bird. We have a genetic capacity or a genetic container. And each individual has that container as well. And if you understand that container, you can thrive in your strengths. So this is whether it be behavior, whether it be our response to the environment, our social tendencies, our food, our exercise, time of day, all of these factors need to be understood to really navigate a person's health in a really powerful way.
Yeah. Once you start working with this, you can't unlearn it, unsee it, right? I mean, it comes into every relationship, every person you meet, every person you work with. I think for a lot of other coaches too, because a lot of us talk, just learning how to meet a person where they are instead of where you want them to be. And I think for the people themselves is meeting themselves where they're supposed to be and not who everybody else thinks they should be, right? Some of us that were told all of our lives, you're too much, you're too intense, you're too loud, you're too passionate, too this, too that. And dialing that back, saying, maybe I am, and I need to dial that back. And then you learn that, well, holy crap, it's my biology. I'm actually created this way. And to embrace it so many people like put things, turn things off of themselves.
Yes. Absolutely.
Because of society, and religion, familial things, how they're expected to be. And I love that because I wanted to bring up, you initially brought it up here, about working with children. And you see parents trying to fit their kids into what they want the kids to be. This kid needs to be an athlete. He's going to go or she's going to go and play every sport out there. And we're going to go watch. And this kid is like, I just want to read a book. I just want to sit and read books. And you hear them talk about it as an adult that I did. I was never into sports, but my parents made me. So like you've talked about all of this affecting how these children develop and how important it is to work with them as kids. So if you would talk a little bit more about that, because I know there's a lot, I have a lot of clients that are mothers and fathers that struggle sometimes with their kids saying, well, why aren't they this way? And how important it is to accept this is who they are.
And this is really important because there is a lot of genetic heritability in behavior. But it's not necessarily from the parents. It could be, it's from the ancestral lines, but it's also embryologically influenced. So things that are happening regardless of the genes and somewhat related to the genes in the embryo that then completely changes the trajectory of a child's development compared to their parents. And I'll give an example for myself. So I'm a very rule-oriented, mission-focused, driven individual that thinks if I get an outcome here, that's a win. Outcomes are gold. And if I don't get outcomes, then I'm not feeling as good about life. And so everything has to have a purpose. Everything has to have some sort of very tangible success point and milestone that I can meet. My son, on the other hand, we've been able to profile him since he was about two. And what I know is that he's got a huge social bias. And that is he is very, very oriented to the social world around him. He's actually not focused at all on getting the outcome, unless of course that it means that he's going to be seen as more connected within a social circle. And you might think, oh, everyone could say this about kids, but ultimately my kid just wants to have fun. That's it. Like that's all he wants, just to have fun with his friends. But you'll notice that other kids go, you know, I'm really driven. I want to get my homework done and I want to go out and do this exercise because my coach said I had to do that. That never crosses my son's mind. And I could be thinking, because I was one of those kids that used to mark down my running times and see how many juggles I could do with my soccer and all of that sort of stuff. My son doesn't have an iota of interest in it. He just wants to be a professional player, but doesn't want to do the pathway that I do. And if I was my normal parent, like if I was the normal parent and I didn't have this information, I'd be saying, you're not going to get where you want to get to unless you do all of these things that match my brain. When in fact, what I find is that his performance accelerates if I just let him hang around with kids that like playing soccer.
Wow.
And all he does is play soccer all of the time. And I don't put pressure on him to do a certain amount of juggles. We just keep it fun. Like we just actually make it fun. We just have a bit of a wrestle. We barge each other around and you can see his skills are just significantly improving all of the time. But if I was in my normal space, I'd be expecting him to think the way that I do, but I know that he doesn't. And it's actually hard for him to think the way that I do. And you only need to be in a partnership for, you know, 5 years to realize, oh, this person actually thinks different to me. And it's not just a choice, or it feels like a choice until you realize it's biological. So when we're working with kids, one of the biggest things that I note is parents are resisting the child's response. And the child doesn't have a fully formed prefrontal cortex yet. They can't control their impulses as well. They are essentially living and breathing their biological response. And so one child comes home from school, is very suppressed at school on his best behavior, but he's actually a very explosive little kid, gets home and just lets out all of this rage because he can finally let that energy out. He's because he's stifling it all at school.
Right.
And the parents are getting really worried about it. I said, this is actually normal that they'd be feeling a little bit suppressed at school and that they need to let that out. So encourage us. Say, hey, let's go outside. Let's box this. Let's punch this boxing bag. Let's kick this ball as hard as we can. Let's actually use this energy so that they can go, oh man, I need to release this energy and I'm allowed to release this energy, as opposed to I need to release this energy and I'm a bad person for doing it as well. And then we, on the other side of things, you know, we have a, an individual's like, yeah, like, you know, the mum's saying, I'm a runner. I like getting out there and running. And my daughter, you know, struggles a little bit with her weight. She's always been a little bit heavier. I just wanted to come running with me. And running is not the sport for this daughter.
Mm.
The type of things that this daughter is going to be better at is different to what the mum is at, who's got a naturally lean physique. And so we put these physical and mental expectations on our child when, in fact, everything that their body is doing is showing you how they're responding to the world. And because they're trying to fit in, they have to doubt themselves a lot. And this is what we find now with our psychology team. We've got people that have been told that who you are is not right, and they're having to unwind it as 30, 40, 50-year-olds,
50s,
and then they get
60s.
Their life back. Exactly.
Yep.
And so
yep.
This is where if you look at your child as a biological impulse vessel.
I love it.
Look at what they naturally do and think, oh, their body's trying to do that to survive. It's not doing that. They're specifically doing it to make your life hard. That's not their intention. You could ask all children.
Right.
It's not their intention, unless you've done something specifically to them and then they're trying to make it hard. But yeah,
right.
generally, they're not trying to make your life harder. They're trying to survive and manage the feelings and the reactions that their body has. And if you can lean in to the feelings that you have, to what you see, oh, I need to get this out, let it out. It's like, I want time by myself. Give them time by themselves.
Time
like this
stuff.
Is part of their recovery strategy. And so this is what we can inform that decision. And we're doing that with schools. We're doing it with thousands of families around Australia right now and globally. And now it's starting to reach, which is very exciting. So, and you know, this is probably one of the most pleasing things that my son can do at the end of a year. I say, isn't it so great that your teacher lets you be you? And he goes, yeah. Yeah, they really do. They let me be funny and they paid me more attention and they made me feel special. And I'm like, that's my son. That's what the environment that my son needs to feel like himself. He doesn't need great maths. But what's so interesting is that the better I've explained my son to the teacher,
mm-hmm.
every year his marks have progressively gotten better without any extra homework. Like even though I would
wow.
be making that kid study all of the time, it's just been he's been more attuned to the teacher. So he's been, and this is where it's, we're getting kids on the right track from the beginning so that they, and this is how we actually create this mission of, or the vision of chronic disease and pain is we have a healthy, firmly self-identifying children who know who they are and they know who they're not, because it's the confusion of who you're not which creates bad behaviors.
So true.
And if you know who you are, if you know what your body needs, you're making informed decisions all of the time. It's when you don't know who you are, that's when people get very lost. And so, yeah, so that's where this all comes around.
And I love that because that's adults and children, right? Because they're still adults in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s plus that don't know who they are.
Yes, exactly.
So they make poor decisions, whether it's yep. the food, the fitness. And that's what everybody thinks that it's all about food and fitness. I mean, out of the six priorities that we use with Shay, it's the one health type that food and fitness are the top two. One
yeah.
out of six, right?
Yeah.
It's other environmental things in the mind. I mean, for three, it's mind. I mean, that's
yes,
that's profound stuff there. And
it is.
Again, we just want to jumble everybody into one thing and say, just take care of this.
Yeah,
and you only
need to look at the blue zones and the populations in like they've all got different diets. The Okinawan yeah. diet is completely different to the Sardinian diet, completely different to the American diet, like the blue zone there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what they have in common is social connectivity and
Absolutely.
Stability in their social circles. I can be who I am, and that's
yeah.
the. And I'm here for the people in my community. Those things have a huge physiological impact and why we have to be looking at those more. And in some cases, your cravings won't go away until you sort out your social stress.
Oh,
if you
100%.
Are constantly, yeah. And this is, people just don't think about that. They
yeah.
just think, oh, I've just, and this is what I did as a dietitian as well. Just eat more carrots when you've got an impulse, as if that's going to satisfy you anywhere near as much as a chocolate bar. You know, it's not a sustainable tool.
Yeah.
So it's actually understanding what can we do to make this person feel like themselves. And from that place, that's where healing occurs. That's where recovery occurs. This is where better decisions, mindfulness will occur as well. So, these are all factors of better health.
The creating awareness is a major component that I see. They start, you meet with somebody and then 2 weeks later you come back and they say, you know what I actually realized? You know, and they have these epiphanies that they think it was just this little thing, but it actually turns out to be something very massive in their overall scheme of getting better, feeling better, just getting optimal. Because if you're like, I've heard you say, and we've all talked about as coaches, when you're out of flow in one area, you tend to be out of flow in several. You're not fully present in any aspect of your life when you're out of flow because it's like just something's off. You just feel like something's off and you can't place it. When you find that those couple things that are off and you get them into a flow, I just had a couple that I work with last night and they said, it's so weird. Like everything's just seeming really easy right now. Everything's kind of flowing. And I said, because they're both in flow. And they're going to be on my show, which is awesome because they're
so cool.
They've just discovered so many things that they said they were just fighting, just resisting and saying, why are we like this? And then when they found out, they said, oh my God, we're going to go buy a house in another state. Kid you not.
Yeah.
Because they needed green over brown. Like they needed foliage and mountains over like kind of deserty brown stuff. And that was part of their biology. They thought they were crazy.
What's so fascinating about that is that we've had individuals that have made that move because they thought mountains and altitude is really important, eating organic kale. This was one of the first times that we used the AI and it said, you are living at an altitude that's too high for your body and you need to move down the mountain and you need to cut out these particular green leafy vegetables. She'd been having symptoms, headaches, bleeding noses, rosacea for the last 10 years, had been to every integrative doc, naturopath, all of the people, the standard medical practice as well. And it was altitude and green leafy vegetables that were actually driving her symptoms.
And here, go ahead.
No, you're right. So it's just a perfect depiction of, because everyone's thinking, well, of course, if you move to the mountains, you're going to feel better and you need foliage. But that's actually not the case for everybody as well. And it's just so important that we're recognizing the importance of it's never one size fits all for anybody on any element of the health. It's even how we become mindful is different. So it's very, very powerful.
Yeah. You see these group programs out there. We're going to fix your hormones. We're going to fix everything. And they're coaches too. First, I say coaches, stay in your lane, be careful, but we're going to fix this issue you have, whether it's diabetes, whatever. We can take 10 people into this group right now and it's all the same. It's this proven protocol. And I'm going, there's going to be what's the percentage that it's not going to work for? And
exactly.
So that's just, and there's that frustration. But this has been a fantastic conversation. You know I can't get enough of you and your information. So we are going to continue this conversation in the next podcast.
Fantastic. So, looking forward to it.
Thank you for being my first. You know I love you and appreciate you. And I salute you every day. So thank you.
Love you and everything you're doing too, Susan. So thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. Okay, let's do it again. Thanks so much for tuning into my podcast. If you enjoyed this week's episode, I'd love for you to share it with someone who would find the information useful. Also, if you can leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts, it'll help the information get out to others. You can check out my podcast site and sign up for my newsletter for updates and upcoming shows, and that link is in the show notes below. And go make it a great day and let your authentic self shine.